Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is. Oh, thank you for that. Thank you for that. You're listening, if I can... Wow, I'm having tongue-tied troubles. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thank you for joining me. I'm broadcasting live out of Chicago. As I always say every day on this show, it's fun, it's great, or I wouldn't do it. And it's great outside. I think it's, in the 60s in Chicago. I hope it's great where you are, even though we've had some earthquakes around the world. We got to keep those people in our prayers, and you know, because they will need them. Obviously, you know, they're getting prayers from all over, and that's a great thing. That's a great thing. Okay, this is the primary date for Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. I'm thinking Bernie's going to pull this out. I'm thinking this is Tuesday, the 19th, in case you're podcasting or listening to the show at a later date. This is the primary vote for New York City. And everybody's saying Hillary's got the most votes. She's got the momentum. She's got the polling. She's ahead in polling and all of this stuff. But Bernie Sanders has been drawing some wildly big-ass crowds. So I'm pulling for Bernie, even though most people are saying that he's going to lose. But, you know, you never know what. He upset Hillary Clinton in Michigan. So, I mean, hey, wow. And she was 10 points or 15 points ahead, and he upset her and won that state. So that could happen here. Bernie was born in New York. Hillary just was not born in New York, but she resides in New York, and she has been a senator of New York. So, but I'm pulling for Sanders. I want him to pull this out, and a lot of us do. A lot of us do. However, like I've said so many times on the show, if Bernie Sanders is the guy you want, and he loses, then we have to back Hillary Clinton. There's no doubt about it. We cannot have Donald Trump as president of the United States. We all know what he's about. I don't have to explain that anymore. We all know what Donald Trump is about and what he's like and what kind of person that he is. I don't think he's qualified. I think a Ted Cruz presidency would be even worse than Donald Trump. John Kasich, governor of Ohio, this guy doesn't have a chance. He should have been out of the race a long time ago. But anyway, by the time I get off this radio show tonight, this episode is in the books. When this episode is in the books, we should have a clear winner here. But however, I believe if Clinton wins, she needs to win in a landslide. Because if she wins by single digits, barely winning, Bernie will go on. He will go on, maybe to a contested convention. He will go on. If she wins, she has to make her winning. She has to come up with a knockout. She's got to knock this guy. She's got to knock him, not physically, but in terms of momentum and from the people who are supposedly voting for her. But you know what? I'm going to fold my hands and pray for Bernie. I want Bernie to get this. I want Bernie to have this. I want him to be, I mean, this guy is 74, 75 years old, and he's got so much energy. I mean, he is a role model for the rest of us, right? He has so, I mean, he can travel from state to state. I mean, all of these damn plane rides and train rides and bus rides, going to rally after rally. I mean, all of these crowds in the thousands going from one college or university to the next, giving speeches. I mean, this guy has, I mean, he's like the energized bunny. I mean, he goes and goes and goes and goes. And like I said before, Bernie should be an inspiration to all of us, no matter who we are, whether we're Republican, Democrat, Independent. He should be an inspiration to all of us. Okay, so I'm going to keep my fingers crossed so as to hopefully Bernie will pull this out. If not, then we have to move on with Hillary Clinton only if she wins a sizable amount of votes. She has to win double digits. Because if she doesn't win double digits, there may be a contested convention and Bernie could still wind up being the presidential nominee for the United States of America as being the first 74, 75-year-old president of the United States. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio, Internet Radio. I mean, I'm all over the world, folks. I'm all around the world. I'm in any avenue, any arena where there is where people have the internet, and that's all around the world. And I've had people contacting guests on the show who were, you know, from other countries besides the, and that's great. That's fun. I'm always eager to get guests on the show or callers who call from other countries. And that's always gratifying. All right, you can always look me up on Facebook. I'm on Block Talk Radio right here, actually, right here. And I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. If you compare LinkedIn and Facebook, they have the people. I'm not saying anything bad or negative about the people on Facebook, but it seems like there on LinkedIn, you have more of a professional arena of people than you do on Facebook. I do think Facebook has the more users, but I do think LinkedIn has the more professional type people on its website. But I'm all over the place. I'm on Google. I'm all over. If I post something on Google, it winds up in the search engine, and that's great. That's wonderful. And so if you're trying to find me, if you're looking to find me, if you want to find me, you don't have to. I'm not making anybody do anything that they don't want to do. But if you're looking for me, that's it's easy for me to find. I'm all over the place online, even working on a new website. I'm having some problems, but I'm pretty sure that I will probably see it through, especially when I'm footing the bill. And we're just going to have to see what that's about later on in to the show. Right now, like I said before, this is primary night in New York. I think next week on the 26th is going to be Pennsylvania. And I'm hearing that Hillary's leading in Pennsylvania also. But, you know, Bernie can come back and, you know, upset her. And I'm hoping that happens tonight. I'm hoping Bernie gets it because I'm like some of the other people. I don't trust Hillary Clinton. Okay, she said too many things that I didn't agree with, and, you know, her husband, Bill, I mean, he looks like he needs to be in a nursing home instead of the White House, you know, so, and Bernie Sanders, a lot of people say he's too old. If people vote against him, they're going to use his age. Well, he may not live out a term in the White House. He may not, he's too old. This man, as I've just got through saying, this guy, if you know him, if you've been following this, you know, he has a lot of energy. He has a lot of energy. Yes, he's a senior citizen. There's nothing wrong with that. Senior citizens are some of the greatest people in the world. Just because you're over 50, you're over 60, you're over 70, doesn't mean that you can't do the things that you want to do, no matter what it is, even if it's running for president. Just because you're 80 years old, that shouldn't stop you from wanting to be president if you're qualified. and you can do this. Of course, you're going to need a lot of money, but but like I said, this guy, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Bernie, not only as for president of the United States, but for his, you know, stanum. I mean, for his vigor, if I can find a word, his vigor, his get up and go for his age. I mean, that is marvelous. That it's something. And let's hope we'll find out what's going to happen later on tonight. Okay, let's move right along in the show, folks. Thanks for joining me on the show. Thanks for listening. As I've always say, once this show is on the air and recording, I always try to thank the people who have said nice things about me, said nice things about this show. Those folks I owe a lot of gratitude to, because you didn't have to say the nice things that you've said, but you chose to, and I thank you for that. Okay. All right, let's move right along. Okay. All right. It's very, 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 very I am so eager for this election tonight. I am really so eager. It's on my mind, but I know I'm going to have to switch to other things to talk about, but it's always there on the front of my mind, and I'm hoping Bernie pulled this out. Okay, ladies and gentlemen who are listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, author David Blake Chatfield would be on the show, but you know, I've done something stupid. When I was booking guests, I sent out the wrong phone number. A lot of the guests was complaining they could not call me. A lot of the guests and the callers were complaining that they couldn't call the show because they felt that the number did not work. And that particular number that I screwed up and messed up and a big ass error is totally my fault, you know. But I tried to straighten those things out yesterday when I got off the show. So David Blake Chatfield will either be on the show or he will not be on the show. It all depends if he's gotten the right number, but if he has the right number to call into the show, because I don't know where he's calling, going to be calling from, but let's hope he has the right number to call into the show. He is a guest, and I'm eager to hear. I'm eager to hear his story and what he has to talk about. I know you are too, but if he decides not to show up, or if the number that I presented him with is not the number, I think it's one digit off. No, it doesn't matter, any digit off. If it's the wrong number, the guest cannot, you know, get in touch with me to be on the show. Okay, Donald Trump is mysteriously, I don't know if some of you people heard this, but Donald Trump had a rally a day or so ago, and he was supposedly talking about something that happened in 2001, 9/11. Okay. I mean, when I first heard this, I just had to laugh. This guy, instead of saying 9/11, he said 7/11. And apparently, I mean, he said this in front of thousands of supporters and on national television. Instead of saying 9/11, he said 7/11. And I know once somebody told him that it was not 7/11, it's 9/11. You know, I'm pretty sure he had egg on his face, and then he just kind of just moved on, pretend like he didn't say it, pretend like he didn't make that error when we know he did. And I'm pretty sure he felt a little foolish there, folks. He was a little he was a little foolish, but Donald Trump was Donald Trump. Okay, he's expected to win New York tonight, and I think he is. I mean, this guy is going to win. I mean, he's going to be the nominee. There's no doubt about that. Republicans, the establishment, they're trying to get rid of him. They want to get rid of him, but I don't think they will, because the people, at least his supporters, are going to put him over the top. Okay, Doris Roberts died. Okay, we'll get into that a little later on. Folks, let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hello, this is David Blake Chatfield calling in.
Oh, man, I'm so glad you called in. did you hear me later, earlier?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I'm glad. I was thinking that you weren't going to call in because I had inadvertently made a mistake and sent out the wrong number to the show, to a lot of guests, and I had to go there and try to straighten that out. So I'm so glad to, that you're on the show, and thanks for coming. Thanks for being here, man.
You're quite welcome. I'm happy to
be
here.
No problem. Okay, give the audience your bio and, you know, things like that.
Okay, well, I have been an attorney in the entertainment business for about 30 years,
mm-hmm.
and a parent, and I've been a manager, and I've represented global companies and music artists and producers and motion picture and television writers. I actually knew Doris Roberts.
Yeah.
I'm sad to hear that she passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been elected to public office twice, and mm-hmm. a senior executive in nationally distributed record companies. And right now I have my own law practice. I'm the CEO of the United Music Group, a partner in CNA Management. And
mm-hmm.
I travel around speaking on international panels and roundtables
mm-hmm.
Internationally. And I've represented artists over my career, such as, I have current artists all over the world. I have 26 artists internationally, as far away as St. Petersburg, Russia. But
mm-hmm.
what is more important is that I have written this new book called Taking Control, Cracking the Code to Happiness. And that's
wow.
where I try to help everybody.
So you're sort of versatile in what you do.
Well, I took all my history, experience, and education and put it in a book to try and help people make their lives work in a time
okay.
when everybody, not just my clients and family, have a problem getting their lives to work.
Yeah, yeah. I want to say something about people getting their lives to work. A lot of people... I don't want to get off subject, but a lot of people, and it hurts my heart to see so many people who are totally homeless. And, I mean, I'm in Chicago, and I see homes. People have been upended. I mean, I see divorces. I see relationship breakups. I see young girls being beaten to a pulp by their boyfriends and husbands and pimps. So it's great to have someone like you on the show to try and help people to get their lives back together or together in general.
Yeah, well, it's a sad state that we find ourselves in. I work volunteering at homeless shelters. I work
mm-hmm.
with the Los Angeles City Council to come up with plans to work out more homeless shelters and get the people who are living on the Venice Boardwalk, you know, proper shelters at night. And, so my book actually discusses an instance where I dealt with a homeless lady who, was just a regular person. And one day her husband died after
mm-hmm.
having a long illness, and she couldn't afford to pay the medical bills and lost her home. And she ended up
wow.
living in her car, and she was upbeat, positive. And eventually she found work and got her own apartment, and she was able to work herself out of it by creating a positive mental outlook. No matter how many
mm-hmm.
bad things happened to her, she
mm-hmm.
just kept moving forward, knowing and believing that the world was good and that she could actually be successful in it.
So how do you actually instill in someone that they can still make it? They can still make it when they're sleeping in their cars, they're down, they're depressed, they may have a feeling of worthlessness because they don't have a place to stay. I mean, some people have been evicted from their homes because taxes are too high. They've been priced out of their homes and now they're on the street. How do you convince somebody that they can pick themselves up off the ground, up out of their cars, and just going on with their lives to improve their lives?
Well, it's really difficult when life is throwing everything at you.
You
just have to try to change your mindset. And I talk to people and I try to get them to appreciate the fact that there's a new opportunity in every disappointment. You know, some of the bad things that happen to you happen for a reason. And you just have to, go through it. And, no matter how bad things get, the sun comes up the next day and you've got a new chance to try and do something. And it's really trying to get your mind in a positive flow and then take action to try and get yourself out of wherever you are. If you're living in your car, do what you can to find work or social services or whatever is available to you. A lot of people are sitting out there and they don't avail themselves to whatever social services are available to them, and that's a shame. But it's really you have to have still, even if you're down, if bad things have happened to you, you're not a bad person. Everybody's inherently good, and you have to surround yourself, if you can, with other people who are positive and supportive, and through friendship and communication, most people can work themselves out of a rut and get themselves back, on track, even if it's slowly.
Okay. Now, the reason why I probably brought up some of that, because I was homeless. I didn't have a support base. I didn't have friends because I didn't want to burden anybody else with my problems. I was homeless through no fault of my own, but I endured. I mean, when I was homeless, I kept telling myself that I was going to do better in my life. I was going to pull myself up by my bootstraps, and I did. I utilized some of the unemployment agencies that were nearby. I pulled myself up because I kept telling myself there wasn't anybody to tell me anything. It was in me to make my life better. And I was determined to do that. I was determined not to let those dark forces that forced me to be homeless win. And I think a lot of people who are out here on the streets have to tell themselves that. They have to pull themselves up by their bootstraps if they don't have any support base. Like, I didn't have a support base. I knew I wanted to be something. I knew I wanted to make something of myself, and I knew I wanted to help others once I could help myself. I wanted to help others because at that point I couldn't help myself, so I couldn't help others. So, but now that I, done something with my life, it's all about helping others, because I don't see how anyone can be on the face of this earth without helping someone with a lot less than what they have.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think we've lived a good day until we have done something for someone else that they can ever repay.
Mm-hmm.
And you really, in your life, demonstrated the human qualities that we all have, the strength and inner strength that we can summon when we're down or depressed or something is bad happening, is as long as we keep moving forward and keep a positive attitude, that really makes a change in your life. I mean, feel that?
Yeah, I felt it, man. I was sometimes when I went to the shelters, there was a tear falling from my eye, but I kept telling myself, I'm going to do better. I'm going to get out of this. I'm young. I'm strong. I can do this. No matter what the dark forces throw at me, I can do this. And I did it. And since that moment on, I've been trying to help other people to get themselves together because, people need help. Like you said, a lot of people don't utilize these social service agencies, and they're right there. That's because they don't know about them for some reason.
Well, yeah, that's not like they are able to walk around and read all the literature on them. You have to be forward and kind of ask questions and try to you know, be inquisitive. You know, if you're desperate to find some food, you know, you can go to some government office and say, where do I go to get some food stamps or whatever you have available? And then they'll send you over to social services. It's different in every state, but we have similar benefits available. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have friends and family that have at one time or another been down on their luck and needed to get a little bit of help. And that, and the people who they interacted with at the shelters and the other social service buildings, and these people actually helped get my friends and family out of their ruts and into more of a positive flow and back into a position like you where you can actually help other people. You're giving back, which is helping people that were like you.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm hoping that a lot of other people are doing the same thing. But here in Chicago, I'm rebroadcasting in Chicago, and we have a governor here that has cut and slashed every single program just about for the poor, I mean, the elderly, disabled, mentally ill, the seniors, elderly. I mean, a lot of the programs that I utilize or your family utilize are not here anymore in some of these states because of this. Some of these governors have slashed budgets, and that's making it even harder for some people. And in some cases, a lot, the taxes are too high. Like I said before, the taxes are too high. And in some cities, whereas rents and mortgages are out of this world, that force people out on the streets and into their cars.
Yeah, that's very unfortunate. I think we should have a government which is a little bit more cognizant of the fact that we have enough resources to share with everyone, and we should be doing that instead of just allowing certain groups to get them.
Mm-hmm. David, do you have an excerpt that you can read from your book?
Sure. Let me find a good one, I think. let's see. Let's talk about settling, you know, questioning your decisions. You know, people who settle for something less than what they truly want end up feeling unfulfilled. Uh-huh. They spend their days wishing that they had not settled. If you know what you want, picture it in your mind and think of a way to achieve it. It may take time, a concept which may seem foreign in this instant everything society, but sometimes the best things are worth working for and waiting for. One big secret about discovering answers to difficult questions is to let your subconscious solve the riddle. I find that if I think of what I want and overtly ask my mind right before I go to sleep to provide me with a way to achieve it, more often than not, I wake up in the morning with an answer. Dreams are powerful things, and so is your subconscious mind. However, my best dreams have been daydreams. Give in to your intuition, and sometimes you will achieve something akin to precognition. I learned that lesson the hard way, buying several cars that were not exactly the color I wanted, and then instantly regretting that having to live it with a decision until the next vehicle. I have now learned my lesson, and instead of getting a new car every 2 years, I finally bought one that I truly wanted without settling. And don't live in the past. You will have no bright future if you're presently reliving and questioning what you've decided in your dark past. Maybe you have romantically envisioned the past as better than today, but your self-deception will only prevent you from living fully in the present. Let go of the past. It's gone, and no force can change it. It's okay to think about it. Remember it fondly or learn lessons from it, but do not live in it, whether it was good or bad. Live in the present moment and build towards your future, which is just one page away from this one. I'm reading from my book. It says, you know, I've lived what my family fondly calls the roller coaster. Whenever I reached what I thought was the top, life has taken a sharp drop. Then there was change, exciting and challenging change. Another roller coaster ride would keep my life exciting again and again and again. I sometimes am slightly tempted to tire of the excitement, the ups and downs, but it's not boring one bit, and I would not have done it any other way. And I always get right back on the ride after I've taken a short break. Live your life without fear, with integrity, and in fulfilling relationships with family and friends. Do not look back. Mm. Do not second guess yourself. Make the best of whatever you create for yourself. And after watching all the commercials on television, it's easy to forget how basic our needs are and how little we can have to make us happy. I sometimes volunteer at homeless shelters during the winter. People like you and me, people you know, have bad breaks and are put on the streets. And then I told you earlier what's in my book after that, which is talking about the lovely lady who was married for 35 years and lost her home and eventually brought herself back into the world. And, you know, she said that it was she was starting to appreciate the little things in life, a warm bed, a meal, a smile from a stranger who was soon to become her friend. And, you know, it's relationships, really, that are the most important part of our life. You know, on our deathbed, we are not going to be thinking about that, you know, nice suit we bought or that car. We're going to be thinking about the relationships we had and all the fun we had with our friends and family and all the good that was felt. You know, it's not what you say or do that people remember. It's how you made them feel, and it's how you feel. And I wake up every day knowing that one day in this week, I'm going to have the best day of my life. And I do.
Yeah, yeah. David.
Every week.
David, I was enjoying your reading of your excerpt of your book, and I was wondering, did a lot of your personal experiences find itself in that book?
Absolutely, yes. The book, you know, I intentionally stayed away from reading other people's self-development books while I was writing the book. I wanted to present a book that came from my experience, from my life work, what I learned in college, in encounter groups, what I learned in workshops, you know, what I personally felt and took back from it, and present it in a way that you and I can easily identify with it. It's not like a textbook. You know, some of my friends have written great books, but they're difficult to read. They read like a textbook. My book actually reads like a bunch of Facebook posts, and it's set up in a way that you start reading my book being one person, and when you're done, you're actually metamorphosized into another person. It's amazing.
Okay.
I get emails
from
all over the world. People are telling me how it's changing their life or in a good way.
Okay. Where can we find your book? I mean, if, you know, my audience wants to know where can I find your book?
Okay, the book's available on Amazon.com. Also, it's available on Kindle. Next month, it will be available in an audiobook on Audible, and also a Spanish version is going to come out. So everyone in our both northern and southern continents here can actually appreciate how to take control of their lives and create happiness in them.
Oh, wow. That's great. That's wonderful. David, is there anything you want to say to my audience that you have not said already?
Well, one thing I forgot to say was that they can reach me at david@chatfieldentertainment.com. That's my email address, and I answer every email. And, you know, I think it's important to respond to people, and I like to help everyone I can. And I think
me too.
One thing I'd like you to take back that I haven't said is, you know, don't take yourself so seriously. Be kind, mm-hmm. accepting, and grateful. Marianne Williamson writes that there are two primary emotions in the universe, love and fear. Mm-hmm. I always choose love. You know, when you're feeling anxious, yeah. angry, yes. insecure, worried, uh-huh. or resentful, mm-hmm. you've left love and entered fear. Always choose love. That's what I'd like to leave your audience with.
Okay, David Blake Chatfield, thanks for being on the show. I want to say one other thing. Would you like a link to this show where you can put it on your website or your blog and you can let your fans and audience listen to you on this show?
Absolutely. Yes, I would. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, I will send you that link sometime tonight once the show has been podcast, once it's been archived, downloaded, and, you know, just totally finished. You know, because it's going to take at least an hour before I can do that, maybe two. But I will totally get you the link. Can you give me your website? I mean, not your website, but your email, so I can write it down. I think I've probably deleted it in my email, but it's what?
David@chatfieldentertainment.com. Okay.
Entertainment.com. All right, David, thanks for being on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, David Blake Chatfield was just on the George Wilder Jr. show. Take care, David. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it tremendously. Thanks. Bye.
I did too. Bye-bye. All right. A wonderful guest he was. He will be back, hopefully, on this show. And we're going to take a break right now, folks. Stay with me. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. This is the talk of our times. The talk of our times. Yeah, all right. Okay, thanks for coming back, ladies and gentlemen, on to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We just had David Blake Chatfield on the show. He's a great guy. I got to get him that link sometime tonight, hopefully, if I got the website correctly. And you go check out his book, okay, on Amazon.com. It sounds like a great book. If you heard the excerpt that he was reading, it sounds, he's a caring guy just like I am. You know, I mean, I wouldn't, if I wasn't caring, I wouldn't have this show. And this show is all about to help you and others. And we're international, so, and that's a good thing. That means everybody, so many people around the world are listening to this show. They don't necessarily call in. I mean, there was a time when I listened to a lot of talk show hosts myself on over-the-air radio, regular radio, you know, not internet radio, and I would listen to them, and a lot of times I wouldn't call in. So but I enjoyed the show. I enjoyed the host and his guests and the callers that call into the show. I just sit back and listen. I didn't always call in, and I know you're out there listening, and you don't have to always call in. You can just sit back and listen, because this is a popular show. It's an informative show, and I think it's funny. I think it's funny because I'm a funny guy, I think, in an entertainment sense, okay? All right, we're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We just got through listening to my guest. I want to thank him for being on the show. And let's go and see. All right, Americans, this is something I want to talk about. Americans are drinking more water than soda. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. I'm diverting a little bit, but that's a good thing. 347-857-1762. Not 1760, is 1762. And that's my fault. Okay, let me get back to the topic at hand. Americans are drinking more water than soda. That's a great thing to hear. Because if you're drinking more water than soda, you know, I mean, you're cutting down on a lot of calories and totally cutting out a lot of sugar, because, you know, that's basically what some of this soda is. Total sugar. You might as well be drinking 5 gallons of sugar, I mean, or more, when you buy one of these 2-liter sodas. You know, and a lot of drinking so much soda with so much sugar leads to what? Diabetes. I mean, water is so much good for you. I try to tell my son that, okay? But it doesn't always work. But I'm pretty sure as he grows older, he'll probably realize to come to that water is better than soda. You know, I mean, water, if you drink water, and I've had a show on this maybe a year or so back, I held a show on the benefits of drinking water. And there are so many great benefits of drinking water as there are negative benefits of going out, getting yourself a 2-liter Coke or an orange pop or something, or orange soda or 7-Up, because these 2-liter pops are filled with nothing but sugar. You're drinking syrup. It feels like you're drinking syrup. So it's great. Even I cut out a lot of soda years ago. Once in a while, I may have one, but I don't indulge like I used to, because the majority of my intake is water. Water cleans you out. Drink enough water, maybe 6 or 7 glasses of water a day. You're going to clean out your insides. It's like being detoxed. You know, every rotten dirt or fat or whatever comes out of your body. your skin starts to glow. You look at, wow, kinds of makeup and oils and stuff to go on your face. You don't need any of that. Water moistens your face, your entire body. You know, if you got dry skin, drink water. Don't go out and buy some sort of cosmetic overdue or makeup. Water does that. And it's great to know that people are giving up soda. I'm pretty sure the Coca-Cola company doesn't like that, you know. And you don't always have to go out and buy bottled water. In some cases, the water from your tap, minus the corrosion, is just as good. I know we heard a lot about Flint, Michigan, and lead in the water, but putting that aside, water is water, and especially if it's good water, especially if it's good water coming from your tap.
Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel on Tuesday laid out a stark choice for the cash-strapped city as he proposed a 2016 budget aimed at resolving a financial crisis linked to unfunded pensions either / vital public safety and other services.
All right, folks, we had a little glitch in the proceedings here, but we are back on the air. You're listening to George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting straight up out of Chicago. We are having all kinds of problems in Chicago, especially in terms of a budget. And if you've listened to the show, then you know what I'm talking about, because I really get it done when I'm criticizing some of these clowns that are supposed to be our leaders in the state legislature here in Illinois and even in the Congress. So I told you about the clip for Tavis Smiley. Let me see if we can't do something here and try to find that clip for you folks. Hold on a minute. Let's see.
Stay
the
with
O'Reilly
it.
Factor.
Bill O'Reilly,
yeah.
In the Factor follow-up segment tonight, the minority vote. 2012, Mitt Romney captured 6% of the black vote. President Obama, 93%. That's a huge advantage for the Democrats, obviously. Writing in USA Today on March 3rd, Tavis Smiley said, quote, "If Donald Trump is indeed the Republican nominee, it might be a miscalculation for Democrats to take for granted that black voters are a lock for their nominee," unquote. Mr. Smiley, the author of a brand new book called 50 for Your Future, Lessons from Down the Road. He joins us now. So I was surprised when I read your USA Today column. I know you're no fan of Mr. Trump.
Nope.
But why do you think that blacks would give Mr. Trump or Ted Cruz or John Kasich a look?
A couple of things. One, I'm tired of black folk being taken for granted by one party, being ignored by the other party, number one. Number two, I did write that in fairness before Donald Trump just completely lost his mind and became the sort of racial arsonist and setting fires everywhere he goes.
What do you called him a racial arsonist on your show and just repeated that.
Mm-hmm.
What comment set you off? What did he say?
You're off the air at 8:50. You ain't got enough time for me to run
the list of all.
Oh, come on. You're wasting good television time, Bill. His anti-immigrant stance, his anti-Muslim stance. His maltreating and that of his supporters, the maltreating of African Americans in the audiences at these rallies. Don't ask a silly question. You know better.
It's
than
not
that.
Silly.
It
though.
Is silly.
If you look at the context, if you look at the context of, and I'm not defending Donald Trump's policies, the folks can decide that. But if you look at the context of protecting American from a flood of immigrants that come in here illegally, and also Muslim refugees who are not vetted very well, as the FBI director said he couldn't do. It's not an attack on a race that he's doing. It's a policy. It's hard. It's harsh, but it's policy.
It's not just harsh, Billy. He's painting with a broad brush, and it has the tone of xenophobia with it when he does that. If I were going to take Dylann Roof, the unrepentant Dylann Roof, who walked into that black church in South Carolina, and use that example to paint every white male in America, you wouldn't like that. And that's what Donald Trump does with Muslims with Hispanics.
But there wouldn't be any policy around Dylann Roof. What I'm disturbed at when you say
hate crime is that is against the law. That is a policy,
yeah,
Bill.
But there isn't a policy that connects to the nation. When you use the word racial arsonist, okay, that conjures up to me David Duke and these kinds of people who their sole reason for being is to run down blacks or Hispanics or Muslims or whatever.
And it took Mr. Trump
too long. He's not that way.
It took Mr. Trump too long to come around to denouncing one David Duke and others when they came out to support him and the robocalls.
You make mistakes, and so do I. That doesn't mean...
Bill, that's not a mistake. That's not a mistake. Listen, you live your life...
I've known the man for a long time. I've never seen him do anything racial.
You live your life by a certain set of immutable principles. I live my life by a certain set of immutable principles. And when you live your life by a certain set of principles, there are some mistakes you just don't make. It's fundamentally who
I don't
you
know
are,
about that.
And this election is fundamentally about what kind of nation we're
all
going
I
to
can
be.
Tell you is I've known the man a long time, and I've never seen him cast aspersions at any group at all.
You might not have seen it, but the rest of the country has all
okay,
during
the
campaign.
I've been around him much more
but
than the rest
but
of the country.
Here's the problem. We're watching one Donald Trump on the news every day. We watch him live on network television every day. And everybody who knows Donald Trump keeps saying to me and to all your viewers, but that ain't the Donald I know. Well, which Donald who's the real Donald? Will the real Donald stand up?
I can't answer the question. I can just tell you what
I know. Should we elect someone who we think we know but really don't know?
That is what they asked about Barack Obama. And the exact question.
The difference was this. The difference was that Barack Obama campaigned to all of America. I think that any person who does not campaign to all of America ought to be automatically dismissed and disqualified.
Okay, but that's
you want to be president for the entire... No, it's not my opinion.
Sure it is.
Okay, back up. It is my opinion.
Right.
But it ought to be yours. And here's my point. If you want to be president of the entire country...
I'm not involved. I don't like the divisiveness either,
yeah.
All right?
And I challenge everybody, not one slice of it.
Okay, but, yeah. You know, if you want to have that standard of behavior, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are divisive as well. They're not campaigning for pro-life people. They don't respect pro-life people.
No, that's just one example. I'll give you a thousand. Trump has his opinions. They have their opinions. I'm not talking about opinions.
Yeah, you don't want to be divisive.
I'm talking about running a segregated campaign. If you want to be president of the entire country,
Trump
then you
tell
ought to campaign
you,
to everybody.
Trump would tell you he wants Hispanic votes and he wants black votes.
They will say that, but it's Ted Cruz... campaigned in black America? Has he campaigned in Hispanic America?
He is Hispanic.
Exactly.
He's a Cuban.
But has he gone after the Hispanic vote with a real policy
you know
program?
What? Again, not. I'm not on their campaign teams, but when I see them saying we want a good economy,
that's talk.
I mean, we're running out of time, and I don't want to because you have a good book. All right? It's 50 for your future. It's lessons. In this book, you say... that, and we only, is a short answer,
sure.
and I'll get, if you want to come back, because we spent a lot of time on this,
sure.
You say to people, look, if you have a certain philosophy of life and somebody is intruding on that, making you feel bad, walk away, right? That's one of your lessons here in this book.
I'm not sure I put it quite like that.
Well, that's the essence of it. If it's somebody's really taking you away from your life experience,
what I'm arguing is you got to be your authentic self and live your life on your own terms. You can't transcend who you are for the sake of pleasing other people.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this book is basically a philosophy, and again, I owe you a segment on it, a philosophy about how to be happy.
How to live a better life.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Tavis, always a pleasure to have you. Thank you.
All right, Tavis Smiley on the George Wilder Jr. Show, so to speak. Anyway, he's got a new book. I'm going to pick that book up because I'm a totally great fan, good fan, an awesome fan, a dedicated fan of Travis Smiley. He's one of my favorites. you know, he's younger than I am, of course, man, however, he is my mentor. Okay, let's move right along. Homeless court removes housing job barriers for people on the streets. We were just talking about people on the street. David Blake Chatfield and I, hopefully you have heard and listened to that portion of the show. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. Okay, this article's homeless court removes housing job barriers for people on the street. That sounds great. That sounds great. Okay, that sounds great. But still in all, I'm in the state of Illinois, and the jobless rate is pretty, pretty steep in Illinois because a lot of people have been laid off already. A lot of people are threatened not to get paid because, you know, these guys can't get themselves together. Okay, for a homeless person who's getting back on his or her feet, a traffic ticket could be the obstacle that stands between him and her getting housing. That's why Sonoma County has established a special court to handle how this demographic is penalized for petty crimes. Because in some cases you cannot get an apartment if you have a police record. For real. And then there are some cases you cannot get an apartment if you have bad credit. Those things should be removed. I think they had an argument about this some time ago in the Chicago City Council with the mayor. I totally agree. I think a petty crime and credit report should be obsolete. I mean, that shouldn't go on, stop you from having some place to live. Just like a job. I mean, you can go out and get a job. A lot of people can't get jobs because they have bad credit. I think they should take that off the books, bad credit, because the state has bad credit. The city has bad credit. Everybody has bad credit. Just about that. Not everybody, but a large percentage of people within the United States have bad credit. You know, I mean, if you're not paying your rent on time, or you're not making your mortgage on time, or you've got something in the or you're not paying your college debt back on time, you know, this and more can cause you to have your debt to be bad. And this can stop you from buying a car, buying a house, renting a good, decent apartment, you know, a condo. That should be outlawed. And I don't think they've done enough for it in order for it to be not on the books anymore. Because too many people out here on the streets now because they have bad credit. And bad credit will haunt you for the rest of your life. And some of this bad credit is needless. It's petty. It's minor. It's small. But it's stopping people from living their lives to the fullest. Okay, when homeless people are slapped with fines they cannot afford to pay, the issue remains an open infraction and one that keeps them from landing a job, like I've just got through saying, getting accepted into decent housing. When the court might be more understanding with this ticketing, it's strict in determining the kind of client it's willing to see. So homelessness gets a bad deal. But you have to realize, folks, some of the greatest, smartest, most intelligent people, the nicest people, the most caringest people, lovingest people are out here on the streets through no fault of their own. Yeah, we talk about social programs, we talk about entitlement programs, but what do they do when these social programs and entitlement programs, just to help them get back on their feet, no longer exist? Because the longer you're out here on the streets, the harder it's going. This is a new day. This is not the 1990s. This is not the 1980s or the 70s or the 60s. This is a new day, and homeless people are being treated differently. Things are harder. Once you're out on that street, if you're out on that street for a long time, you know, things get harder. Things get tougher. But you have to have, just like David and I discussed, you have to have a strong will about yourself in order to get back up on your feet. It's tougher. I mean, because when I was homeless, it's a lot tougher than when I was homeless, or some of the people who have been on this show were homeless. Because just about everybody I talk to, just about some of the people that I meet, somebody has a story of saying that they were homeless, even if it was for one day or a week or whatever. Or homelessness can be started by a fire in your apartment building, a fire in your home, a tornado or something. These things, these elements can cause people to lose their homes and become homeless. You know, you have your family member or your mother or your father might kick you out of the house or something. These things cause homelessness. And I've seen a lot of teenagers when I was working at the social services agency, working along with social workers and caseworkers. I've seen a lot of teenagers, 15, 16, 17 years old, walking into my office, walking into the office, homeless. I mean, it breaks your heart. Teenagers they're walking into the office looking for shelter. It breaks your heart, and especially when you get to talk to one of these teenagers. You get to talk to one of them, and they tell you all they wanted to do was to get an education. They want to go to school, but they have no home. So it's harder for them to go to school that they have no home. And I met a lot of these people, and it's heartbreaking. It makes you want to give them a home right away. And they would come into the office looking for shelter, and it was heartbreaking to tell them that all the shelters were full. And then some of the shelters, back in the day, there was a time you could walk into a shelter straight up off the street. You could walk into a shelter straight up off the street. Nowadays, it's changed. You cannot do that. You have to have a referral letter. You have to have somebody who has recommended you. You have to, in some cases, even if you have children with you, you have to have ID. You know, they make you go through a lot of hoops nowadays to just get into a shelter where you probably going to be sleeping on the floor in a corner somewhere because there's so many people. And then you have shelters who totally each and every night turn thousands and thousands of people away because they have no room. They have no funding. So you've got a lot of people sleeping in their cars, sleeping in the park, sleeping on bus benches, sleeping by the curb, walking up and down the street and waiting for the right time to go back to the shelter. So it's a mess. And we've got a governor here in the state of Illinois and a mayor and some aldermen. They just don't give a damn. The homeless is nothing. And then you've got people who are homeless. They have jobs, but their jobs doesn't pay them enough for them to get up off the streets. So they have to go to shelters. That's only if the shelter will accept them. So it's rough out here, folks, and it's just getting worse by the minute. I mean, it's getting worse by the time that I sit here and tell you about it on the radio. I'm probably not telling you anything that you don't already know. But it's tough in the city of Chicago. I mean, the homelessness. I mean, I tell my son all the time, I say, son, we live in an area where there is no homelessness. But all we have to do is go two or three communities down, and there it is. It's smacking you in the face. It's heartbreaking. You seeing entire families out on the street, women with three or four newborn babies pushing their babies up and down the street in a stroller. Nowhere to go. You see entire families walking back and forth and nowhere to go. It's heartbreaking. You're seeing kids that cannot go to school because they have no home. And then there's However, you can go to a shelter, and if you accept it into the shelter as a family, you know, they, I do think at one point they provided school buses to pick up the homeless children from the shelter to take them to school. I don't know in the city of Chicago if they're still doing that because of, there's no budget in place in Illinois. So if there's no budget, there's no spending because everything costs money. It costs money to be homeless. Shelters have to have money to keep running in order to accept the homeless. The money stopped coming. The state money stopped coming. They have to turn so many people away. And a lot of people who worked and volunteered at that shelter can no longer do it because of the finances. It's rough. It's hard. It's totally, totally unfair. But you know what? We can't. This might be harsh to say, but we cannot keep moaning and groaning for the homeless because we don't know if we will become homeless one day ourselves when we're trying to help other people to pick themselves up off the streets. And it's tough. It is tough because things are going up. Things are getting more expensive. Rent are going through the roof. In some cases, you have to have good credit to rent an apartment. You cannot have a police record. In some cases, you can't even have a parking ticket. It's tough for people out here. And like I've said, I used to work at a grocery store as a hot food clerk. And a lot of the people there, teenagers, people in the 40s, 30s, and even some seniors, a lot of these people, not all, but a few, were homeless. They left that job. They went straight to a shelter. And that was only, like I just got through saying, that's only if they could get in. They can get in. I don't know how much the government is working on trying to eradicate homelessness, but I can tell you this, they're not doing a very good job of it because it's getting, and, you know, I'm a witness. So therefore, me and my son and my, you know, friend, we go, Cecilia, you know, so we go every, maybe we try to go every Thanksgiving and every Christmas to the shelter, feed the hungry, to help try to get some of these people up off the streets, even though it's a daunting task because with the budget cuts, but we do what we can. And it's great to see so many people coming to these shelters in order to give a hand to the homeless. You know, even if it's just bringing them a plate of food or something, it's great, or a blanket or a coat. All of that stuff is just wonderful to do. And my hat goes off to all those people who do that to try to help the homeless. But when you become homeless yourself, it's kind of hard to help those in need when you're the one that's actually in need. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I will be right back, folks. I hope you enjoyed that Tavis Smiley clip. We're going to have more of that. And hopefully, maybe one day we can have him on the show. Maybe one day we can have a show. Okay, we got a smart quiz question, folks. What is the rule of law? Okay, we're going to have that answer for you as soon as we come back from a break. Let's see, we got that clip. Okay, we might have to. Okay, we're not going to do that one. Okay. Okay, what about? No, we can't do that one. Let's go up a little bit more. Can we do clip number 5? What about clip number 4? What about this one here? We're going to do this one. Be right back, folks. Thanks.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
All right, the smart quiz question was, what is the rule of law? Okay, there's several answers here, folks. So everyone must follow the law. That's one rule. The other one, leaders must also obey the law. Government must obey the law. No one is above the law. You want to bet some of these damn politicians around here think they're above the law, especially in the state of Illinois. We still have no budget, folks. We are 10 months without a budget. And a lot of us are thinking that if we should go into a year without a budget, which is only 2 months from now, a year without a budget, we should all just jump into our cars, buses, trains, bikes, and go to Springfield and throw these jackasses out, Bruce Rauner, Governor Bruce Rauner, first. This is ridiculous. And if you've been listening to the show, you can podcast all my back shows, previous shows, best of shows, and you will hear me blasting Rauner. I talk about him because he's a lousy, failed governor of the state of Illinois. He's letting this state, he's ruining this state on purpose because this was his plan from the outset. This was his plan all along, even before he was elected. During his campaign, this was his plan all along. A lot of us think that. A lot of us feel that. Even the two biggest papers in Chicago, the Chicago Sun-Times, the Chicago Tribune, have blasted this guy. Republicans, his peers, they have blasted this guy. But he's dead fast on busting unions and taking away workmen's compensation from workers. And now one of the controller, I talked about this yesterday, the controller of Illinois, she's talking about stopping paychecks of people in the legislature in Illinois till there's a budget. But the thing about it, folks, that sounds good, but I'm kind of wary of it. But anyway, Rauner doesn't need a paycheck. He's a multimillionaire. He doesn't need a paycheck. He would never need a paycheck. So this will not affect him. This will not affect his pocket. But the other guys in the legislature, Illinois legislature, this will affect them. I mean, they got houses, they got homes, they got mortgages, they got rents, they got families, they got kids to put in college. So this will affect them. They got to buy food. This will affect them. Maybe it's a good move. Maybe it's not a good move. We will see. But we do know that this will not affect Rauner. Some people are saying Rauner has his fingerprints all over this. It could be. It could be because he's always trying to come up with something to convince lawmakers to take his side on his turnaround agenda and screw middle-class people, the people of Illinois. And the Democratic legislature said, we're not going to do that. So, and another thing about Rauner, he's one of the worst governors we ever had in this state, in the history of this state, in the history of Illinois. This guy doesn't talk about crime in the city, the crime around the state. He doesn't talk about the budget. He doesn't talk about things that need to be talked about because he's not a people person. He's not people oriented. He's not. He is a my way or the highway guy. All he is, he's not somebody to sit down and compromise. He's not somebody you can work with because he wants to control everything. He wants power. He hates the unions in this town because they have too much power. He doesn't like the legislature, the Democratic legislature, the House of Representatives, the Senate in the Illinois, because they have too much power. And he wants some of that power. And the legislature in Illinois refuses to give him any. So he's going to hold this state hostage. He's going to cut every program and sit back and blame other people for it. So we have a mess in Illinois. I mean, it is a mess. People are leaving. Businesses are packing up. You know, I don't blame them. I don't blame them. And this doesn't bother the politicians. This doesn't bother the politicians. People are leaving. The taxes are too damn high. Rahm Emanuel is to blame for that. A lot of people called the legislature and demanded that John Cullerton, the leader of the House of Representatives, the leader of the Senate in Illinois, because to take back the proposal he had for Chicago drivers to tax them every mile they drive. So he got an earful from people around the state on that proposal to tax drivers every mile that they would drive. Stupid. Another tax. Another tax on top of so many taxes. And still we haven't got a budget. The budget is clearly in the hands of Bruce Rauner, and it's been in his hands for over a year since he's been in office, and he's done nothing. He's came up with all kinds of ways to say that it's somebody else's fault, to blame somebody else for what he's not doing, holding this state hostage forever. He has to realize something. He only has two terms in office. And that's if he make it to a second term, because his ass will be voted out if he's not thrown out. Totally. He is a gross failure in the state of Illinois, folks. I talk about this guy all the time, and I'm going to keep talking about him in a negative way until this state pulls itself up out of the mess that he's put it in on purpose. We're here on purpose. This is what he wanted. This is what he's planned. He should have right now someone running for his job. I think if he hangs in here, if he's lucky enough to hang in here in 2017, he should have an opponent running against him. He should have three or four, because he is so disliked in the state of Illinois, he would be voted out in a heartbeat. And he doesn't seem to give a damn. He's going to spin it in a positive way. Well, I've been voted out, but you know, it's because of the Democrats. They wouldn't let me do my job. He's doing his job. He's cutting everything. That's doing something. Because if he wasn't doing anything, I'm pretty sure they would have probably impeached him by now. But he's doing a lot of the things to hurt the state. He's doing nothing positive for the state. This guy is coming up on 2 years that he's been in office, and he's done nothing but hurt the state. Totally hurt it. And we all know this. Republican, Democrat, Independent, we all know this. The guy doesn't give a damn about the state. I don't understand. He doesn't even govern. He's no leader. He's nothing. The only thing Bruce Rauner has got, the only thing he has a title at the beginning of his name that says he's governor. That's it. That's it. He hasn't done jack nothing for the state of Illinois. What he's done is hurt the state. He's hurt it. Illinois is bleeding, and it's continuing to bleed. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Thanks to my guest, David Blake Chatfield. That's a great name, Chatfield. Sounds like something a name you would find in a chat room or something or other. He was great. He was wonderful. He talked about helping others, and that's what it's all about, folks. It's all about helping those who cannot help themselves, and that's what I'm about. That is what I am about, and thanks for listening to the show. We will be right back, folks. Father, All right, folks, we're just about off the air. See you tomorrow. Folks, just about off the air. See you tomorrow.